This is the Media Freak podcast. It's the latest and greatest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs, we're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Smartly. Buki from Coffee Cup.
What up?
Charlie from Show Heroes.
Hello.
And we have another fabulous guest this week. It's Aaron Thomas, Senior Sales Director at LG Ad Solutions. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Hey, hey, hey. Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
How are you doing, Aaron?
Yeah, good. Busy. Coming into Q4, couple of days. Head down and yeah, let the hustle and the games begin.
Well, it sounds
Q4
like you've
hustle,
been...
let's go.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been hustling hard because you are an industry diamond. You've recently won the Rising Star Award at the European Video Awards last week. Big congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Very blessed and very honoured. Thank you.
And you've also been named in this year's UK Future 100 Club by the Media Leader.
I know, crazy. And then also, congrats to Buki for making that list too.
Come on.
Representing, let's go.
Well done.
Say so that next year for us, eh, Harriet? Eh?
Yeah, I know.
We'll just... All right, guys, we can put you forward next year.
We'll have a word.
We'll cry in the corner. You two were considered the next generation of leaders, the ones who embrace disruption, foster inclusion and strive for excellence. Does that sound like you?
Yeah, I try to be every day. I think it's all about small steps. Just do the easy things and the big things will come into play. So yeah, trying to do all three of those things.
Nice. See, that's where our strategies differ because I just spout shit. No, I'm joking. No, I actually completely agree. It is the small things. It's the little ways that you can, you know, empower the people around you and have that positive impact because there's so much change and so much flux, I would say, in our industry. All of us here know that it's tough enough to kind of keep everything on an even keel. So just being able to do that on a daily is the main thing.
Well, very well done, you two.
Yeah, and back to what you said, it's about consistency. Like I trained for the marathon and got injured 6 weeks before last year, which is really annoying. But if I said to myself, right, I've just got to run 26 miles, then that looks like a huge, huge task. But actually, if you go, right, let me just get 5K in the bank, 12K, 15K, you know, then you start to see that progress. Then you start to see that change that you're looking for. And I think that's definitely real in the work sense. You know, you're not going to change the wheel or change your business overnight, but, you know, do that enough times, then you'll have made that 360 turn.
Very good. Very good. Well, we're glad we've got you on the pod today, Aaron. We need your vibes. Well, anyway, in today's episode, we dive into Meta's new ad subscription, unpack Kantar's latest report to guide full year 26 media planning, and hear from our guest about how the media industry can better support parents. So let's get into it. In tech giant news, Meta is launching a paid ad-free subscription option for Facebook and Instagram users in the UK. This means that users will have the choice to either continue using the platform for free with personalised ads, or they can pay to avoid seeing them. So if users subscribe, they of course won't see ads and Meta also can't use their data. Now, we've talked a lot on the podcast previously about the regulatory pressure that's faced by the tech giants, specifically Meta and Google, and whether that pressure would really shape their direction in the future. And I think that this move is a clear example of that shift in direction. Well, what do you guys think? Buki, I'm going to pass that to you first.
Yeah, so no, I actually couldn't agree more. I think we're seeing like a couple of things kind of happen. This legislation's come in and they've given the power back to audiences across, you know, these platforms. So now we're in a position where people are opting out. So technically, There is a way where across Meta and across Google, the addressable audiences in the long term are shrinking. I think Meta and Google have spied this a long way off because they're not the first ones. You know, Amazon Prime Video have got an ad tier. YouTube's had an ad tier for ages, or an ad free tier for ages. And so we're now in this space where they're going to have to protect their revenues in the long term in the face of this changing legislation. So I think this is absolutely the way that they are going to have to play it, but I think they're still going to need to balance it, because at the end of the day, the ad funding is the way that Meta is printing cash. So they're not going to want to go to a full subscription model, but they need to have it in their back pockets just in case things move. So I definitely think that's going to be the case.
Yeah,
I've got a slightly more cynical view on it, I suppose.
Ooh, I like the fight.
Shock, yeah. But I mean, the reason why they initially brought this in, right, was because the EU demanded that they give users a choice of whether or not to use the data. And the way they facilitated that was by adding an ad-free tier, which is paid. And then they then got fined for it, 200 million, because apparently that's not in the spirit of it. But it's kind of a direct result of them trying to wiggle around the regulations. Now, do we have any info on the uptake of this? Because my sort of thought process here is that actually consumers are pretty open to receiving ads, particularly on social media, right? So when we talk about Netflix, the default was not having ads. Then ads came in, and so that was a bit more difficult. But ads have always kind of been around in the sort of mobile space. So do we see there being a huge change here? Because as you said, Bookie, as well, like Meta's, you know, obviously their wallet is stuffed full of cash as a result of advertising. If too many people join the ad-free tier, that is going to affect their ability to you know, fill their coffers.
Exactly.
So do we have an idea of what the uptake could be?
I mean, it's fairly new, isn't it? Like, so I don't think it's even been implemented yet. It's in the next few weeks. I think the place to look, though, potentially to give us an idea of what the uptake might be to kind of like traditional like news sources. Like, you know how a lot of them have had to go behind a paywall in order because they didn't have the ad revenue to support. But then it's probably a similar audience that would say, I don't want to see my ads on Meta. So I think that might be where we could look to see the uptake, which I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm sure we can find out.
I imagine that if too many people take it up, then what they'll do is they'll introduce a third tier, which is like ads light. And then you've got the pure ad-free tier, ads light, where it's just less ads but for an amount of money. Because they need to keep the advertising in there, don't they? So we'll see.
They'll have diet ads, then vanilla.
But also one thing to remember as well, like this doesn't get rid of all the ads, does it? Because all sponsored content is still on there. It's only like sort of the pure ads in between that affects, right?
Exactly. And I think that kind of stuff will continue to rise. I think we're seeing it, you know, the resurgence of content. I say resurgence, like it ever went away, but I think that is going to be a really, really huge place. I think sports partnerships are popping off, gaming partnerships, also lifestyle part. Everyone's got a partnership going on right now. So yeah, I couldn't agree more, Charlie.
How do you think this is going to impact the broader advertising ecosystem?
Kind of just follows the trend, as you said there, Bookie, doesn't it? Of other companies doing this, but yeah.
I think in terms of broader, I don't think it's going to have too much of an implication on some of the other. So like if we're looking at like, you know, broadcast, radio, TV, CTV, I actually don't think it's going to affect those spaces as much, just because of what you were talking about, Charlie. People are used to ads in those spaces. That's the default. So I don't think it's going to have a huge implication on that. But where it will reverberate is through the digital ecosystem.
In the measurement category, market research company Kantar has shared their annual report, providing an overview of the media landscape. And it includes key insights from consumers and senior marketers. Now, the report provides a really interesting list of the top five ranking media platforms among global consumers, as well as top ranking platforms among marketers. So what's quite interesting about this is that no single brand actually, or platform, actually appears in the top five for both consumers and marketers. So my questions to you is, can you guess what they are for consumers versus what they are for marketers? And Vicky, I think you're going to get the answers right here. So I'm going to put this to Charlie first in the hope he hasn't read the report.
No, I've not read it. Okay, so I've got to do both. All right, let's start with, which one should start with? Consumers, I guess.
They're
not the
like.
Same in each. They're not the same in each.
Okay, no, none okay. of them are the same.
Okay. Well, I guess from a marketer's perspective then...
So you're doing marketers kind of, first?
Yeah, so like yeah, safety okay. safety in brand safety, safety in scale. Scale's got YouTube in there. Where is YouTube on that list?
First.
Okay, nice, well done. Nice. Well done.
Have a check.
TikTok? TikTok's not in that list.
No. Ooh.
That shocked me as well, to be fair.
Okay, Instagram's got to be in there.
Ding.
Yeah. Oh, God, I don't know. Like, Google as a whole?
Ding.
In search stuff? Yeah, okay.
Good job.
Super safe. I don't know. I'll give up. What's the other ones?
Number four is Netflix. Oh, and number five is Spotify.
Spotify. Okay, that's interesting.
You could have had a stab at that, Charlie.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I'm impressed.
You did very well. Okay, and what are the top ranking platforms among consumers?
Okay, so consumers care less about what like marketers feel, but I mean TikTok. There we go. I'll give it again. TikTok's got to be in there.
That's correct. Yeah, but TikTok is third.
Third. Ooh, interesting. Okay.
There's one that really surprised me, actually.
Twitch has got to be in there.
What? You've definitely read the report. Well done. That was number four.
Go on, let's save me the time and do the rest of them. What
okay, number one is Amazon. Number two is Snapchat. Okay. Obviously, you Snapchat. Guessed correctly, TikTok and Twitch. TikTok rating third, Twitch fourth. And five is Prime.
So there's three Amazon Video. Properties in there.
Yeah, there are indeed, like
Amazon,
Charlie
Twitch, and
I.
Prime. That's fair.
Yeah. Yes, guy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And Snapchat.
Exactly.
Oof. I use Snapchat just to send photos of my dog, but like generally speaking, I thought the actual content in there isn't fantastic, is it?
My God, you have walked right into my points. I love you so much. So
go on, Vicky.
So I think Snapchat is absolutely slept on. We're like, when was the last time you met with Snapchat?
Well, I mean, you're talking to the wrong people here now.
Yeah, exactly. Snapchat is slept on because I think I include myself in this, the generation of like planners and everyone right now who was around when Snapchat was like coming up. It was like something that we just like dabbled in at uni and we were like, that's enough of that. But the way the younger generations are using it now, it's like no other. They don't think about WhatsApp. They use Snapchat as their primary mode of conversation. And then when you look at the way a creator will put a campaign together on Instagram versus Snapchat, it's crazy. They might do three Instagram stories of their trip. And it's like, look at me going to the plane. It's like, look at me in first class. And now look at me at the beach. Whereas Snapchat, they would have 50 individual, really almost behind the scenes. And so Snapchat has almost been able to cultivate this community with the same creators and the same content technically, but executed in a different way. And the younger demographics are absolutely mad for it. Like, for example, on this list here, TikTok, the year-on-year change, TikTok was first last year, this year's third. Snapchat wasn't even in the top five. It's now second. That is the rate of growth amongst younger consumers for Snapchat. And we are almost given, okay, boomer, because we don't want to be there, when actually it's probably as brand safe as as an Instagram, be perfectly honest. So that is a very interesting one. But thank you
just
for teeing me up gorgeously.
And I don't want to, hopefully not giving away my algorithm here, but it's a lot of things about ingrown hair, Bonnie nightclub punch leaked, more Bonnie Blue, and then a load of AI stuff about skilled workers. So yeah, all right, maybe I need to spend a bit more time.
You might need to curate your For You page there, or your algorithm there, because I don't know how you ended up in that corner of Snapchat.
Interesting. Okay.
This doesn't surprise me with Charlie, to be honest. But
it could have been a lot worse, let's be honest.
Ingrown toenails, hilarious. Sorry, just on this, because I just have a couple more things to say on this quickly. Obviously, you kind of mentioned that the two lists don't really correlate, but Charlie, you made a great point that the brand, the best brand safe and the places with the most scale are obviously very popular with marketers. But I think in following on from our last pod, to be honest, so are almost the ease of use. Amazon have three different properties in the consumer list. But we said last week that, or last episode, that their DSP is absolutely difficult to use for planners. No one's really adopting it. So even though we're seeing the audience is there, so we're talking about reach, these places can achieve that reach, but without that ease of use, planners, activators aren't getting on there. So I think that's a huge disconnect between the two lists, as well as brand safety.
So any final thoughts, Buki, for 2026 planning?
Yes, I reckon in 2026, everyone just needs to reevaluate their like kind of assumptions about different platforms. Because I reckon if we were to look a little bit further down in the consumer list, we'll start seeing places like Discord and Reddit. And us as marketers, eek, we're not there. Like, there's a few people there, but we are not. So that's my piece.
Watch this space. Thank you, Buki. Mic drop. Moving on. In CTV news, so LG Ad Solutions has announced the launch of a new partnership. It's a creative solution allowing advertisers to transform their digital and social content into CTV ads. Now, this was announced earlier this year in the US and is now available globally. But my question's for you, and I'm glad we have Aaron on the pod today, but with prominent players like LG Ads leveraging ad tech partnerships to scale their offerings, thinking more broadly, how is creative automation actually changing the game for advertisers now versus in the future?
I think it's huge. I'll start on that one. I think it's huge. You know, traditionally for brands and advertisers, creating high quality TV assets is very time consuming, very expensive. It opens up the barriers for smaller brands to be on the big screen in premium environments. I think we've all worked with brands before which have had creative issues, whether it's production or from budget. It just kind of brings the smaller brands on a bit of a level playing field.
Especially, it's like we were saying about Meta and how much, you know, they hoover up ad spend. A lot of it is from those smaller players. So if you can give them the platform to be able to get from the small screen onto the big screen, then that seems like a very good idea.
Yeah, and social is the fastest channel, isn't it? Like, it enables brands to like respond to those viral moments. So, taking that viral moment and whacking it out on somewhere else is huge.
That's actually sick. I hadn't actually thought about it in that way. Because, yeah, I was coming at it from like, you know, an efficiency type way, which has been perfect. And I've worked on clients before where, you know, we were a digital first. Yeah, in my role, we were digital first. Everything we did was digital. And then obviously when CTV came in, it was like, oh, where's that sitting? But then it sat with us. So all of a sudden we were technically planning TV, but across the digital landscape. But this allowing us to, you know, react real time is not something I had considered, because it's been a while since I've done that. But yeah, I really like that as a benefit of that. Reacting real time on the big screen as opposed to on the small screen where everyone else is.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, creative automation really is changing the game and shaping the ad ecosystem for the future. Exciting stuff.
It is really adaptable, really scalable, and there's also levels of playing field. It's very, very exciting for us.
Moving on, in the MarTech landscape, we'd like to talk to you about Alchemy Network. Alchemy is a unique innovation consultancy that's helping companies gain competitive advantage through marketing and advertising tech. They work with over 550 brands and agencies globally, identifying needs and interests that then save agency folk time and effort by curating the landscape and condensing it into bespoke bite-sized sessions. They can be used if you have a specific brief in mind, or simply as a form of learning and development to keep your finger on the pulse. If you're interested, you can email hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out more. Well, there we go. That wraps up the news this week. You can respond and have your say in any of the topics and stories we discuss on the podcast. Email us. It's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. Very good. Let's move on to our guest segment. So, of course, as we mentioned earlier, our special guest today is Aaron from LG Ad Solutions. Hooray! Now, we've obviously spoken about you being a award-winning figure in the industry who's championed diversity and inclusion, but you've also got a very important role. And what role is that, Aaron?
Oh, I'm a dad to a beautiful four-year-old that keeps me up at night, jumps in my bed, but she's an absolute bundle of joy.
Oh, what is it? A he or a she or a they?
Oh, sorry, daughter. So,
oh,
yes,
daughter.
It was a she. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Bless. And what's her name?
Her name is Nyla.
Nyla. Oh,
yeah, she started school, 3 weeks ago? So that's been a nice transition and change. Just, you know, I think school turns kids old overnight. She came home and was like, oh, the big kids are wearing their bag like this and she doesn't want to do this and wants to be a bit of a cool girl now. So, yeah, it's lovely to see her. Yeah, settle in very nicely to school. But I think it was probably harder for me and my wife to watch her go through the doors.
Oh, bless her. Well,
that's what I was thinking, because like literally you got that point where you're like, oh, my tiny baby who I've molded and now you want to wear your bag like that.
Yeah, 100%. And also, the day we dropped her off, she didn't cry because we've spoken to her so much about school. So she was excited. She kind of just went in, threw her bag on the peg, and I was like, then left. And I was like, I almost needed you to cry because then I could focus on you. Now I'm walking away like sobbing, like tears down
now
my cheeks
crying.
And stuff like that. Yeah, right. So yeah, bless her.
Well, our media freak host Jack has all this to come. He's currently on paternity leave and soon to be navigating.
We're not paying him though, yeah.
We're not paying him. No, we're definitely not doing that. But he's going to be navigating the work/family life balance. So, Aaron, we're eager to hear from you, really, on how the media industry as a whole supports parents and carers and what needs to be done to make things better in the industry. So we're going to guide the conversation with a couple of questions and we'd love to hear your insights. So are you ready?
Absolutely ready.
Very good. Well, we know your background is sell side, but obviously as part of the job, you work with a lot of agency folk and obviously develop quite strong relationships with people working in the whole co agency world. So with that considered, do you notice differences between kind of agency versus publisher side cultures in supporting parents and family life?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few differences. And I think you can almost break this question down into another segment where you go pre-2020 and post-2020. Because post-2020, everyone was able to work from home and laptops and second screen and etc. But actually, there was a lot more kind of openness for parents to go home at a certain time or start a bit earlier and then leave at 2 or 4 to do the nursery or picket run or look for their carers. So yeah, I think the, you know, whatever happened in 2020 happened in 2020, but I think that is one thing that has really helped parents, because I always think Nyla was born in 2018. How would I survive? Like, how would I be able to kind of get around being a media professional and then also a parent? But in terms of like agency and sales size, I think there are vast differences. Of course, as you know, being media owner, you have to entertain clients, whether that's at lunchtime, may involve a bit of drinking, or at the end of the day, or even sometimes, you know, weekends. But actually, you're always with an agency partner or a client with, you know, at those events. From what I've heard on the agency side, like, you know, there's pitches that, you know, you might have to spend 2-3 nights in the office. And also from a sales professional, I create my own work. So the more meetings, the more presentations I have, the more briefs I get, that the more work I do. But actually from an agency side, there's client-related work. Mr. Client sends you a message or Mrs. Client sends you a message and says, can you do this for me? Then there's work from up above in terms of management delegating towards you. And then there's obviously business kind of works. Yeah, I think it also depends on your boss, right? Because I think it's very difficult to be in that environment and say, look, you know what, I have to chip off at 5:30 because I have to pick up someone or look after an elderly parent, where I don't really have that pressure. And if that pressure is there, it's already in my diary and I know that that's going to come. And then also I've made arrangements with my wife to kind of do pick up. So I do think there are vast differences.
I like that point. Sorry to jump in, but I do like that point of it. I think a lot of this is very, very dependent on your boss across so many different areas. I think just when you have a boss that is, you know, flexible and understanding, or also exhibiting the same behavior, showing you that it's okay to go and pick your kids up, it's okay to do stuff like that. You don't have to feel it in your chest quite as much as almost like anxiety of like, oh, I'm asking for preferential treatment. So yeah, I think bosses make such a big difference to this kind of thing. Not that I have kids, but I see stuff.
Yeah.
But I also think actually you can have a boss that's a parent that understands that, but not have a boss that has to be a carer for an elderly person or someone who may be sick in your family and may not understand that. So I think it's all on the person. I always talk very highly of my boss, Ed. Yeah, he's a parent and understands it. But even if he wasn't, I know he would understand it through an open conversation, etc. Yeah, I think there are vast differences because one, from agency side, your work is kind of created elsewhere sometimes, where from a salesperson point of view, I create my work and actually I know that I can set clear boundaries in terms of managing my day.
Yeah. Well, you've obviously spoken a lot about work-life balance in that answer. And recently, an industry personality, Media Lad, who I'm sure many of our listeners know about. Recently, he certainly is. Recently appeared on the NABS podcast, sharing his own personal journey on work-life balance and maintaining resilience. Which was really good. So if you haven't tuned in, do listen. Obviously, you've done a lot of extracurricular stuff outside of your kind of day-to-day with your recent award wins and things. So how do you actually manage your time to be able to do that as well as family life?
I think before I had a family, and you know, the top thing for me was career, right? Go, 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 go. And obviously that kind of changed when Nyla was born. So a few years ago, I had to just set myself some clear boundaries and kind of just make it clear to the people around me about these boundaries. You know, one of them, I think this is, even when I'm managing, I think this is so, so important. It's like when people are on a holiday or annual leave, I'm a huge believer in like no contact during those times, unless the place is burning down or you really, really need to text someone. But I know some people may go on holidays or annual leave and still have their emails open or their Slack open and still kind of checking things or messaging people or, you know, days off. And I'm like, actually take that time to recharge, relax and just come back stronger, whether you have a family, whether you don't, whether you're a parent or guardian or not. And, you know, further on from this, I also use the app features, the Apple app features on my phone, but I know there's some third-party apps that you can use. My apps just get blocked off from 6:15 in the evening because that's like the golden hour just before my little one goes to sleep. And then also on the weekends, and then they turn on at 7:30 so in the morning. So yes, I can go into them and sometimes I will do. But I think that's a very clear line that I can then spend time with my daughter and then spend time with my wife in the evening. And that's that clear boundary if it allows you, your workload allows you to do that. But there is that kind of pre-2020 kind of work career mode in me where I'm an early riser. So I'll just wake up at 6 or 5 or 7 and start work then in order to kind of make allowances for when my workload is a bit higher. Look, career is still very, very important to me, but so is my family. And, you know, I make my career and everything else work around my family. But then, like we said, Bookie, earlier on, it's about having an amazing boss at the same time.
Very good. Well, Aaron, moving on to our final question. Media still faces very clear challenges around diversity, equity and inclusion. So from a parenting perspective, how are you helping to challenge the norms at work?
Well, I think doing what we're doing is talking in spaces like this. So thank you very much for having me on. I think it's very important because it's just about sharing stories. And sometimes where you may be going through something from a DE&I perspective or a parent perspective or even neurodiversity perspective or whatever it is, you know, people are with you and in that same boat or have been through that same issue as you before. I sat on a panel for mental health and fatherhood, and we discussed the pressures of the modern day father and what they face, and part of that is battling the toxic masculine traits of old. You know, you might have had, you know, fathers or men or whoever from older generations going, you know, changing nappies, that's not my job, or you know, things like parental leave. You know, I had 5-6 months of parental leave and very, very lucky and blessed to have that. But I actually felt, I remember the day before going on parental leave thinking, oh my gosh, is someone going to take my job? Am I going to have that value? And then I said to my wife at the time, I was like, is this how you felt? She was like, yeah. And then I was like, well, look, females and women all over the world are feeling this exact same feeling. I should be speaking to my friends that have children about this. And also, like, actually, my return to work, from parental leave was a bit of a bumpy one. But I've actually heard so many stories of, you know, from my friends in the industry and out of the industry of going on parental leaves and having crazy stories. So I think it's all about the talking, the sharing of ideas and kind of just raising awareness that, you know, being a father, especially in 2020, whether it's media industry or out of it, it just takes a different shape to what it used to.
I just want to say, firstly, big up you for saying that, because that is a story that I've got a lot of friends who have kids, but predominantly women. And I've heard that from them. You know, my return to work was bumpy. No, yeah. I was scared about losing my job. Like, it wasn't really well communicated, all that kind of stuff. So it is really, really refreshing to hear that from the male's perspective and to see that, you know, the lines are coming. It's becoming a little bit more aligned as your parents are being more present on both sides. So, no, thank you very much for sharing that. I think it's a really kind of big topic to get into.
And I think there's like more on parental leave too. Like, you know, from like, imagine being with your child, or even as a caregiver, you know, being with them for 6-9 months as in your children, or just staying with someone for a couple of months, or living with them and then having to go back home. There's that separation anxiety about that. Yes, you may be at work and you're all gung-ho about the agency life or LG ads, but in the back of your mind, you're like, what's my little one doing? Are they okay? That's my biggest fear about Nyla going to school. I hurt myself all the time at school, and touch wood, I don't want to have the same phone calls that my mum had. But then also, like, for the people that are not on parental leave and have never experienced that, I had to tell one of my friends off not too long ago because he's got a child, and he said, I haven't done any of the early mornings because, you know, I've got work all day and my missus is looking after the little one. And I said, I promise you, if you said to your missus, would you rather a day of work or looking after your child, even though it's your greatest bundle of joy and they're amazing, she would say, do you know what, I'd have a break and go to work. Give your missus a break, wake up in the morning with your little one and give her a break. So it is taxing. People do this for 9-to-5 jobs and sit at home and like grab a glass of red and go, what a day. So yeah, there's a lot of respect
in men. That is men supporting men. I love to hear that.
Well, that's men calling out men in support of women, because women are very, especially carers and parents, they're very, very special. So a lot of respect for them.
Nice. Well, we can see why you won the award here, Aaron. So well done. Well done. Well, really loved your chat and your answers. So we appreciate you being honest and transparent about your experience overall. And that wraps up this week. So thanks so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you like listening to our Freak this week, remember to like, subscribe and tell all your friends. And huge thanks to Aaron from LG Ads. Woo-hoo!
Thank you very much.
Cheers, y'all.
See you next week.